you been to Barcelona recently? Have you hung out in Venice? Have you walked the old streets of Rome? If you have, you've probably noticed something. Tourists, travellers, fellow visitors, they're everywhere, in their thousands, in their millions. The European hotspots have always attracted tourists, but lately it seems like it's getting out of hand. There are people everywhere in Barcelona and Berlin, in Venice and in Rome. They're on the streets, in the restaurants, at the monuments, in the galleries and in the museums. There are more Gorkas than there are gondoliers, more tour buses than there are tapas bars. And it's a problem. The locals in these cities are sick of us. There have been widespread protests in Europe. There have been widespread protests in Europe as the people who call the likes of Barcelona and Venice home voice their concern about the numbers of people arriving on their doorstep. Are they overreacting? Or are travellers really ruining their favourite destinations just by being there? Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. On this episode, we're going to talk about the global tourism epidemic. We're going to throw ourselves into overcrowded cities like Barcelona and Venice and try to figure out if there really is a problem. And if so, why? What can you do about it? And where else can you go instead? As ever, I have two fellow travellers here to discuss this conundrum. The first is a traveller.com.au writer who's known around these parts as the tripologist, Michael Gabicki. Hey, Michael.
Hi, Ben.
Thanks for coming along. Also with us, she's a travel writer, blogger, and videographer who's just stepped off a plane from Borneo, Nina Karnikovsky. Hi, Nina.
Hi, Ben.
Welcome, guys. Thank you very much for coming along. Now, let's talk over tourism, crowded cities. Do you sympathise with locals who live in places like Barcelona and Venice?
I really do. I think the people who are getting screwed out of all this are the people who are living there and who are not involved in the tourism industry.
Right. Which is the vast percentage of
exactly
people,
right, yeah. Some people, okay, if you're involved in tourism, it's hard to be anti-tourist, really,
right.
Isn't it? Because that's your living.
You're turning away customers.
But you know, for people who just want to go about their daily lives, who want to catch a bus or a train or whatever, who might want to shop in the market, La Boqueria Market in Barcelona, for example. I mean, the stallholders are becoming really frustrated because it's a great market. It's fantastic. One of the best markets in the world.
Yeah.
But for the stallholders, they're being inundated by people who just want to take photographs of the
produce.
Very expensive hams and stuff like that that they're selling. So the people who actually want to buy aren't coming anymore.
Because they have to dodge all these selfie sticks.
It's too difficult to even get near the counter.
Right.
So, yeah. It's tough for a lot of people.
Yeah. I've read a few comments on news stories on this with people saying, well, we just won't go there anymore and let's see how they like that. And I think, you know, the people who are complaining actually wouldn't really mind if you don't turn up because they're not making any money out of this. Yeah. What do you think, Nina? Are you on board with that?
Yeah, I am. I was in Paris earlier in the year and my guide made the very good point while we were walking around the Upper Marais. She was pointing at all these lovely sparkly boutiques that, of course, we as travellers think are fantastic. But she's like, well, that was the butcher. That was the hardware. We have nowhere to buy these things that we need for daily life because all of these apartments around here are foreign owned or they're B&Bs and there aren't the services for the locals anymore. Can you imagine living in a city that used to service you so well and then having to travel really far away to go and get those things?
Yeah.
That would be so incredibly frustrating. And I mean, you know what it's like. I mean, Sydney has its own tourist numbers and personally, I mean, I do find it annoying if I'm in a touristy area. If I lived there, having people shove cameras in your face or are just generally behaving badly, you know,
I think it's kind of a natural thing
or whatever.
I go to a few cafes even in Sydney where I live and look around and I think, these guys are all just tourists.
Like,
get out of my cafe.
There you go. There's the answer.
Yeah.
Exactly. I just think it's a balance thing. I mean, obviously, tourism is great for GDP and all those sorts of things, but it's also, even for the traveller, it is important to maintain some sense of real local culture.
Yeah.
And if it is 90% foreign-owned and all these businesses are popping up, then there's really no local feel anymore.
Yeah.
Or if there is, it's synthetic, so that you're in some weird kind of theme park version of the city that's meant to feel real but doesn't.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And Michael, why do you think this is becoming such a problem now? Why is it suddenly taking hold in Europe in particular?
One thing is cheap airfares.
Right.
I mean, airfares have never been as cheap as they are right now in real terms.
Yep.
You know, I'm seeing fares going to Europe now for $1,000 out of Australia. I mean, that's just extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing is the rise of the middle class in China. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chinese people are now traveling in huge numbers.
Nina, do you sort of think about your impact on a place as a traveler when you're doing these trips?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think obviously something we need to address is the whole cruise industry and the small amount of time that people are spending in these places. You know, it's a different thing if you're going to go for 2 weeks, spend 2 weeks in Venice and, you know, stay in a locally owned B&B and eat in locally owned restaurants and shop in locally owned shops. That's a different thing because you really are contributing in that way. But if you're coming in and out in half a day, and what do they call them? Ice cream tourists, where they buy an ice cream, get back on the cruise ship where everything is included.
Yeah, there's no incentive to even buy lunch because it's included on the cruise.
But, exactly. Yeah. So I think, you know, there is a right way and a wrong way to do it. That's either contributing to the problem or, actually... soaking the place in.
So how bad is it getting, Michael? You just got back from Dubrovnik.
Dubrovnik,
which is an extremely popular city, right?
Dubrovnik, yeah, it is. It's certainly one of the headline attractions. And again, it suffers from the problem of being on the cruise circuit. You know, that Adriatic cruise circuit. So it becomes a logical stop either to or from Venice. Beautiful city, but very crowded. UNESCO has decided that the city has recommended that the old city should have no more than 8,000 people in it at any one time. And they've set up cameras all around the place so you can, at the gates, they actually monitor the number and you can watch this happening in real time on the on the website. When I was there, they had 9,000 people and it did feel really crowded. There's no attempt made to try and control the numbers.
These people come in. What do you do? Put in turnstiles and stop people from going in?
I mean, it gets more and more crowded and the visitor experience becomes devalued.
I've been in Barcelona fairly recently and Rome as well. And you know, these places, there are a lot of tourists there, no doubt. But I also find it very easy to get away from them if you want to. You know,
exactly right.
Yeah, once you get away. I mean, the Centro Storico, the historic center in Rome, pretty much all of that is filled with tourists. But as soon as you step outside of that, even just across the river in Trastevere or something like that, it's pretty easy to get away from these hordes if you need to.
Yep, that's very true.
But this is the thing. I think a lot of people don't want to get away because maybe they have a limited amount of time and they are like, okay, I'm just going to tick off all the big sites.
If you're really passionate about those sites, you're right.
Which I think is the problem. Maybe there's just not enough education or, you know, forward planning to try to get away. It's that whole thing of like, I want to go where Terry and Jane went on their last trip, and that's where they went, so that's where I will go.
And I think another part of the conundrum that's really interesting is that theory of mine to get off the beaten track and get away from people, that's also really annoying for locals because all of a sudden the tourists are going from that one spot where you know where they all are, and all of a sudden they're appearing all throughout your city and they're staying in the apartment right next to you and they're hanging out in your cafe taking up the tables. And you're still annoying. What do you do?
That's right. Well, I mean, it's like that even on a local level at home, right?
Yeah.
You want to like live in the part of town that is up and coming, not the part that is already there, you know?
Yeah.
And there's always this chasing of the next thing, right?
Yeah.
So, and I mean, there's always a market for all types of travel, right? There's always going to be the people who want the off the beaten path, the unknown. There's always going to be the people who want what is hot right now, and they want it regardless of the impact that it's having on anybody. So I know there has been discussion, I believe, in Croatia and Venice of this kind of tourist tax thing. And I don't know whether the tax exactly is the answer, but it's somewhere like Bhutan that has the minimum daily spend of 200 US, I think it is. And, you know, obviously
which
the caps
is essentially
the numbers
worked into your visa cost, isn't it?
And I think it's covering like your accommodation, all those sorts of things as well. So it's more regulated in that way. So obviously that's very difficult to implement once things already are at the level that they're at and with so many foreign investments from all these different cruise companies and all these sorts of things. But it would be nice to see because then there's a guarantee that at least the money is going to the right place.
Yeah.
Even if the things are overrun, at least the money is going into the right place, not just to some huge company.
Right. Mm. Michael, have you noticed a sort of anti-tourist sentiment in some of these places? I know in Barcelona there have been street protests. There was talk of organizing them in San Sebastian as well. Apparently there was some graffiti in Barcelona that said, Gaudi hates you, which I found really amusing.
In English.
Yeah. But have you noticed a feeling in these places?
I've never seen that. But sure, it is happening. There was, as you say, in Barcelona, there was a case earlier this year of a tourist bus being attacked and having his tires slashed.
Yeah.
Look, I guess it is happening. It's pretty rare these days. I mean, the fact that it makes the headlines shows you that there's not much of it going on. It's really difficult because, you know, on the one hand, there are a lot of people making a lot of money out of tourism.
Yeah.
Barcelona City has a population of about 1.4 million.
Right.
Last year, they got 32 million tourists. And that's just phenomenal. How do you cope with that?
That's so amazing. Gosh.
That's a lot of money, an awful lot of money coming in. And tourism also, the great thing about tourism is it provides an awesome number of jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, politically, it's you don't want to turn off that tap because, especially in a place like Spain, you know, what are you going to replace that with?
Yeah, a country that's been struggling financially.
Yeah.
You can't send all of those tourists away. Yeah.
Politically, that's very difficult to do.
Yeah. I have to say, I've never felt particularly unwelcome in any of these cities. You know, I think these are very isolated incidents that we're talking about. Mm. Even places like Berlin, where there is a real groundswell of protest against gentrification and travellers coming into these suburbs that previously haven't been very touristy. Mm. I've still not really felt unwelcome there. And I think it's, you know, you could be unlucky and experience that. But on the whole, I think people are still quite fairly welcoming anyway.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the contributing factors to this sort of explosion of tourism, but in particular, the stuff that's bothering people. I think cruise ships is something that we mentioned because they're arriving in these places which may have previously been difficult to get to and just disgorging thousands and thousands of people into these areas who stay for a couple of hours and then jump back on board and off they go again. I can see how that would be a problem for people.
Yeah, exactly. But it is that double-edged sword, right? Because I think we should all be seeing the world. And for a lot of people, it is, maybe it's easier for mobility issues, for financial reasons, whatever.
Yeah,
and it's
absolutely
good that people are seeing the world. But, you know, ideally you have some kind of cultural exchange happening. And I don't know whether there is loads of that happening with that kind of tourism where it's just hop off, see things, take a few selfies, put it on Instagram so that everyone else wants to go to that same place and then leave, you know?
Another thing I find really interesting and sort of a conundrum, if in a sense, or a challenge anyway, is the sort of rise of apartment rental websites like Airbnb, which I use as a traveler because I love that aspect of being able to stay in these places that feel very local and sort of immerse yourself in local life. But at the same time, I think it's also contributing to this anti-tourist sentiment because all of a sudden tourists aren't just staying locked away in hotels, but they're popping up all throughout cities and they're becoming very much a part of people's daily lives.
Yeah, I don't know. I think my feeling about that is that the Airbnb, say, phenomenon tends to spread the number of tourists beyond the area where they would normally be confined to. Normally they're going to be in the city center, a few other areas, I guess, where there are large numbers of hotels. But you know, Airbnb, all of a sudden, you know, you're out of that. You can be anywhere, really.
Yeah. Airbnb, I know one of the things that they say is that when people come into these areas, they then support them because, you know, they go to the local cafe, which wouldn't normally have tourists there, and they buy from the cafe or they go to the supermarket. Which I can see, but at the same time, there's a lot of people who just live there and don't own that cafe and don't own that shop who all of a sudden have to put up with all these tourists now as well.
I guess so, but do Airbnb numbers exist in such concentrations that they're actually impacting on, say, the fact that maybe you can't get your regular seat in a cafe? I don't know that they really are. I mean, I think, you know, it does tend to be fairly dispersed as far as whenever I'm looking at the maps and so on.
Yeah, it probably depends on where you are, the sort of impact it has. I know in Berlin in particular, there's a lot of neighbourhoods where there didn't used to be any tourists and now there are tourists who want to stay there because they're cool. Places like Neukölln and Kreuzberg, people want to stay in those places, and so the best option is to stay in someone's apartment, and that's driving up the rents.
Well, that is a problem.
And it's forcing a lot of the people who've lived there for a long time to move out now.
Yeah, that is a problem for locals.
I find it difficult because I use it when I travel. It's real insight into the way people live in that place that you wouldn't otherwise get.
Absolutely. Mm. How else do you see what they're wearing?
Actually, I went out for a beer in Lisbon with the guy who checked me into my Airbnb.
There you go.
It was fantastic. Yes. And I never would have met him had it not been for that.
So, exactly. Yeah. So I'm gonna say I'm voting yes.
I'm obviously for.
Yeah. Yes.
This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Beat the crowds by visiting lesser known but equally breathtaking spots on one of Intrepid's off the beaten track adventures. Traveling on a small group tour is a sustainable way to travel because you'll have less impact on the environment, you can experience local life, plus give back to the local economy in the process. Intrepid's trip leaders are local to your holiday destination, so they know the unmissable highlights and local secrets you won't find in any guidebook. Visit intrepidtravel.com to find out more. Nina, one thing I found interesting was you mentioned that that social media is playing a part in the way people are traveling now and the impact that they're having.
Yeah, I mean, it's undeniable for anybody who has Instagram and uses it for travel purposes. I mean, we're all guilty of that. You see the beautiful shot and you go, oh, I want to go there.
Yeah.
But the problem is then you probably want to go there and take that exact same photo
right.
and put it on your Instagram, so it's this like self-perpetuating thing.
So do you think people are now just going bang bang bang, get the shots and move
absolutely.
On
absolutely yeah there are the funny things in all parts of the world where people will go, you know, I have to go to that specific lookout and get that specific photo and, you know, have the reference of the other person's photo to replicate it. And I mean, that could work both ways because, yes, maybe they are going to Venice and wanting that shot, but also maybe they are going to somewhere really remote and going, well, I never thought of that place before, but because I saw it on Instagram.
Yeah.
So it works both ways in that sense, but probably more to the popular destinations.
Yeah. And I think another thing that social media has done is the fact that everyone is carrying a camera at all times now. You know, maybe on a selfie stick, maybe not. But cameras annoy people, and they're such a visual reminder of the fact that that these are tourists who are getting in your way rather than just everyday people.
Yes.
Everyone, you know, taking photos of their food and taking photos of everything at all times.
Yeah.
And, which, you know, we used to laugh at certain tourists for doing that, and now everybody does it.
Do you do it?
Yeah, I do.
Yes,
I do, yeah.
Same. And yet when you see other people doing it, you think, oh, that's outrageous. Where's my selfie stick?
I don't have a selfie stick. I have to
say. Yes.
But I think it is contributing to making tourists much more obvious and much more sort of annoyingly in the way all the time when they've always got their cameras out taking photos.
Yes, but it is the modern world and the way we do things, and at the same time it does get other parts of the world seen. So once again, it cuts both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, look at our professions is encouraging people to go and travel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
it's a conundrum for us.
Very true.
It's a paradox.
Hopefully we're also encouraging them to go to places that are beyond the obvious as well.
And to lessen their impact as well, which is something I wanted to talk about actually. Mm. How can people go to these places that they really want to go to and yet cause less trouble than they might have been. Mm. What do you guys think?
You know what? I think we should write a book about the etiquette of travel.
Yeah.
Because there could be so much to be said about this. I mean, there are certain ways you can conduct yourself, I think, to not annoy the locals. Not only in terms of not annoying the locals, but also in terms of, you know, like we were talking about before, I think giving back to the actual local communities and not just sort of sweeping through to get your selfie and then leaving again. But I think things like, you know, being aware of how your behavior is in public spaces, you know, not being like the rowdy drunk person with your selfie stick and your... not making any effort to speak the local language and those
just taking note of local customs and the way local people conduct themselves and trying to do that same thing.
Exactly. I think is a big thing. Yeah, and doing a bit of research into, you know, okay, so what should I be wearing and how should I be behaving and what is acceptable and what is not acceptable.
Yeah, I think dress is a big part of it. It seems such a superficial thing, but I think if you can dress yourself to a standard that local people do, then you're going a long way to making yourself more acceptable in their area.
Yep. Sure.
What else would you do, Michael?
Look, I'm a big fan now of traveling out of season, especially.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I still want to go to Venice. I've been several times, but I want to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Rome, Paris, all those places. And it's pretty obvious when the peak season is in all those places. So I would try and go out of season. I know the weather's probably going to be lousy. A lot of the cafe, I'm not going to be able to sit outside in the cafes and that sort of thing. I'd certainly go to Venice in November, December, January. When the weather's pretty bleak.
And Nina, you mentioned the idea of slow tourism.
Yeah,
spending a bit more time in places rather
than spend a little bit more time so that you can really get to know the place and give yourself a chance to get off the beaten track a little bit, because the more time you have, the more time you have to explore and to go off and do day trips and take the time to make your own discoveries, not just do what, you know, Instagram or the guidebooks.
And not be madly rushing around, trying to bump people out of the way to get to the thing that you need to get to today because you're leaving tomorrow.
Exactly. And giving yourself a chance to, I mean, you know what it's like when you're traveling and you're kind of rushing from one thing to the next versus you're sitting around and you're actually going to have a conversation with a real person that lives there. Or, just give yourself a chance to actually get the feeling of the place and maybe speak to people about where do you go as a local? Where should I be going?
Right.
What could I see tomorrow without that kind of itinerary of knocking things off, I think is a fantastic way to do it.
Michael, what about for, let's say, for cruise passengers who don't have that time to spend and who are going to go fairly quickly between places?
Yeah.
What are some of the steps that they can take to lessen their impact?
Well, that's a tough one because, you know, time is against them. They've got a very limited amount of time. There's certain things that they want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Often, you know, cruise passengers are not young.
Yeah.
They're kind of more psychologically comfortable traveling in a crowd,
mm-hmm.
I think, rather than getting off on their own. I mean, by the nature of cruising, that's what it's all about, really.
Yeah.
So that may be a bridge too far for a lot of cruise people.
I think they could spend money in the places that they go to.
Yeah.
Say if you're going to wander into a market and take photos, buy something in the market.
Yeah. I agree completely. Or you know, there's a rule of thumb. One of the, I think it's Nomadic Map says never. You have to, if you're going to eat, you have to walk 5 blocks away from the nearest tourist kind of Ramblas or whatever.
I've found even 2 blocks will do the job.
Exactly.
You don't have to go far at all.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
My experience too. You don't. Yeah. Just get away from the main drag.
Yeah.
And you can find some place where there are. Obviously, look for places where there are locals eating, where the menu doesn't say we speak English. Then, you know, you're probably going to have a different experience. You're certainly going to eat with locals, eat local food rather than the pizza that's, you know, kind of universally dished out all over the world.
Yeah.
Maybe eat some of the local food as well. I think you'll have a better experience. So, just try and be a bit adventurous, you know, get off the beaten track a bit.
Yeah. I know, Nina, you're a big advocate of spending your money with local organisations rather than maybe the big sort of multinationals that you might see around the streets in these places as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, exactly like Michael says, I think avoiding the signs in English when they're not meant to be there.
Although, I'll tell you what, I've been into a few restaurants like that and I think, no one speaks English, great. And I think, oh, hang on a minute, I've got no idea what to order.
That's
like
true.
In Japan or China or something like that. I'm like, I'm in big trouble here.
What greater adventure
Yeah, it usually works out fairly well.
I bet you've had some great meals.
But there have
like
been
that.
A few moments where I thought, actually, a bit of English would be handy.
Yeah, exactly. But once again, I think that, you know, the more time, the better. If you have it, if you have it, the more time to walk the 5 blocks or the 2 blocks.
Yeah.
Rather than just, I've got to rush out the door, because obviously these places are set up that way to make it convenient for everybody to get the food closest to the hotel and everything. But so if you have that time to walk, then that's great.
Yeah. And you can look for cruise itineraries that have more spare time, worked into it, which will give you the chance to do that, to go and explore on your own and find places.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe, you could take the mindset of, okay, so the next big tourist destination that I go to, so you want to go to Peru and see Machu Picchu. So you go, okay, I'm going to do that because I really want to do that and for good reason. But then it's like, okay, what am I going to add to that? That's something that not everybody is doing. And maybe that's a good approach to kind of just add one thing.
Right.
So that you get to do something that not everybody has done. And you then can be the one at the forefront of starting
revolution.
The trend, you know?
Well, actually, I was going to talk about some alternatives to these places. Mm. Because, you don't have to go to Barcelona. You don't have to go to Rome if you don't want to. There are other options.
Yes. And
Michael, you suggested a few of them. I think Girona was one of them instead of Barcelona.
Yep. Lovely city.
Probably the best ice cream shop I've ever been to is
really?
In Girona.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. There's
it's a place called Rocambolesque, and it's owned by the same people that run El Ciudad de Can Roca, the restaurant that was number one in the world, is now number three.
Really?
Or
well,
so.
There you go. Gosh.
But their pastry chef has a little ice cream store as well, and it's set up like a sort of Willy Wonka factory with all these spirals all over the place.
Fantastic.
And he only has about two or three flavors of ice cream a day and all these things to put on top, and the flavors are just incredible. It's so good.
Oh,
Yeah, I mean, all those great Mediterranean countries have a lot to offer. You don't have to dig very, very deeply. Italy has tons of places. I mean,
Naples doesn't get much love, but I really
like Naples. Naples is a great city. It's extraordinary. And nobody, no tourists there.
Yeah, because everyone's scared off.
Yeah.
Because there's all these stories about mafia and pickpockets and
exactly
everything, which
right.
people used to say about Rome and Barcelona as well, but really it's not that bad.
No, not at all. I mean, same thing with Papua New Guinea. Big fear factor. Nobody goes there, but it's a sensational country.
Yeah, right. I think Nina, you've been there as well, haven't you?
Yeah,
it's great, isn't it?
Agree.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, and I think exactly this fear factor that you're talking about, Michael, I think that is true of a lot of parts of the world. People just kind of cross it off mentally because they just think, oh, no, that's too far flung or whatever, but I think if you speak to a couple of people that have been there or you read a little bit more about it, often you'll find that it is it's a safe thing to do in the right places, and it can lead to some of the best travel experiences of your life. But like I know, for example, say with India, if I always say to people, if you're going to go, it would be very hard to say, okay, go and just go to some far-flung place down south, right? On the first journey, you want to see the things seen in the Darjeeling Limited, kind of scenes.
There's a reason why Barcelona is so popular, why Venice is so popular. These are amazing destinations. Yep. They're great.
So this is the thing. I think maybe this is, the return destination, or as we were saying before, you add it as a second thing to the big ticket sites, because they are big ticket sites for a reason.
Yeah, sure.
They're
they
incredible.
Are. Yep, you want to go there. I want to go there. I want to keep going there.
Exactly, exactly. But yes, there are all these other places. I mean, Ben, I know that you have also experienced Mongolia. I mean, how incredible is that?
Yeah.
And you feel like you're the only person not only there, but on the planet.
The entire world. Yeah, really. When you're out on the steppe there, staying in one of the little felt gers, and the wind's whipping across, and it's incredible. And there's nowhere else like it.
Yes, I think you get a sense when you go to places like that, or to Papua New Guinea, you kind of, there is this little, you feel very proud of yourself. I did something that not everybody does. And there is really, that is a feeling like not a lot of other feelings in travel.
That's true, yeah.
I
feel like much of the Middle East falls into that category as well. I know, Nina, you've spent a lot of time there.
Recently. I think you're about to go to Jordan.
I am,
so amazing. I mean, talk about somewhere that obviously because of the, in inverted commas, noisy neighbours of Jordan. Mm. They have, since the whole Arab Spring, they've had very low tourist numbers, and a lot of the places, I mean, even Petra, when I was there, there was hardly anybody there.
Right.
And it is just the most mind-blowing thing. I mean, I was very prepared to be underwhelmed because it's Petra, and I got there, and I just Right. Was absolutely,
all expectations.
Absolutely loved it. And, you know, you can go and be in the middle of the desert there, just Lawrence of Arabia, you know, where all the scenes were shot. And, and once again, you feel completely on your own, and you're not, I never felt really like a tourist, because because you're there with such small numbers of people.
Yeah, you never feel like you're bothering anyone by being a tourist. Yeah. Iran is another country which I talk about a lot. But it is a country where at no point do you ever feel like you're bothering anyone by being a tourist. You're so warmly welcomed and you're seeing these amazing sights. And it's usually just you and whoever you're traveling with, and that's it. Mm. And that's probably the only tourist you'll see for the entire day.
Yes.
And again, a bit of a fear factor,
Exactly. Yeah. And completely unfounded. It's such a safe place to travel around.
Yeah.
And you get such a warm, friendly welcome there.
Mm.
You kind of feel a little bit silly for going to these popular places sometimes when you visit a spot like that and realize that there's so much more out there to see than just the places that everybody else goes to.
Mm.
That's right, and I think it's one of those things you do it once, and then you think, okay, well, where
else?
Next intrepid destination will I get to? And it's like you want to one up yourself, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite cool to just do it once, see how you feel.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not for you. Maybe you do want to go.
Yeah.
I get that you might want to go where all your friends are or whatever. And I mean that's great too. But who knows? Maybe the person who does love it, and then it'll open up a whole new side of travel.
And as we were saying, you know, there are parts of Italy, parts of France, parts of Spain where you can have that experience as well. You don't need to go to the Middle East if you don't want to. You can very easily get off the beaten track within the mainstream destinations.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, guys. Well, I thought I'd just throw out a few names of cities and we can come up with a few alternatives for people to travel to instead. We did mention Barcelona, and Girona is one of them. Any others, Michael?
The area that I know best, I guess, is Italy.
Yeah.
I'd say Ferrara.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Bologna.
Yeah.
Fantastic city. Oldest university in Europe,
great
I think.
Great food. Student
wonderful.
Population. Good music.
Great food. Astonishing food.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago when I was in Italy, we were staying at in Lake Como. But then we went across to another city called Varese.
Mm-hmm.
And Varese is a mid-sized city, I guess, in the Alps region. And it's a region where they produce a lot of footwear.
Right.
And honestly, they have this pedestrian thoroughfare there. It's quite long. And it's like you're walking along a fashion catwalk. No kidding. Everybody there is just so beautifully dressed. And it's on one of the lakes. The food there is incredible.
Yeah.
It's really authentic. It's not tourist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just a sensational experience. And there are lots of these, you know, mid-sized cities all through the north of Italy. Well, in fact, all through Italy.
Yeah.
You don't have to look that far to find them.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah. Try and get off the beaten track in Italy. Explore some of these.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Nina? Any favorite alternatives that you can think of?
Well, just because I am part Hungarian, I'm going to say that I think more people should go to Hungary. Budapest is obviously a fantastic city.
Yeah.
But
still not nowhere near as heavily touristed as a lot of Western European cities.
Exactly. And then you've got Lake Bolaton, which is one of the biggest lakes in the world, and there's all little sort of spas all around the edge of it, so that's a fantastic place to go to.
Yeah.
The village that my grandmother is from, Sercaș Beherva, which, you know, all these little villages around there that you could just, I'm sure, literally hire a car and just go exploring, and you would come across the most incredible places.
Yeah, right.
And I think also just generally kind of Eastern Europe is a less explored.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. A lot to offer.
And I mean, it still has a lot of those things that you would look for in a Western European country, but with fewer people around. One of my favorite alternatives is for people who love Berlin, the city of Leipzig in the former East Germany. It's kind of nicknamed Hypezig because it's got such a buzz about it at the moment. But a lot of the artists and musicians and creatives who were living in Berlin and who can't really afford to live there anymore have been enticed to move to Leipzig.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge student population there as well. So you get a lot of the things that are so great about Berlin, but with a lot fewer other travelers around. And so it's a really fun atmosphere and gives you a little bit of a feel for maybe what Berlin was like 10 years ago or 15 years ago or so.
Mm. Wow, I want to go there.
Now, guys, just to finish up, I was going to ask you, what would your final tip be to travelers who are going to Europe? Would you say to avoid the big places? Would you say to just travel in a different way? What do you think people should do?
I'm going to say do the add-on.
Do the add-on.
Do the bonus.
Yeah.
The bonus side trip. So, yeah, go to the big place that you want to go to, whether, you know, what is it now? Puglia.
Yep.
Is the big thing.
It's the place.
So maybe go there and then plan a little side trip to somewhere that you've never heard of or that's a bit more off the beaten track so that you can kind of value add your holiday.
Absolutely. Mm. Michael, how about you?
Yeah, look, I'm going to say go out of season. You're going to want to see the big attractions are always going to be there. They're always going to have this magnetic pull, but, you know, just try and avoid the times when you know it's going to be crowded because the experience won't be that great.
Yeah, right. Okay. Mm. I would say to people to try and think about the idea of respect when you're traveling. You know, if you're staying in an apartment, you treat it the same way as you would your own apartment and treat your neighbours the same way as you would your own neighbours. You know, dress the same as locals do. Talk to people in the same way as you normally would. You know, don't just yell at them because they can't speak English. And I think, you know, if everybody does that, the world's going to be a much better place and tourists will be warmly welcomed wherever they go. Yep. My theory, anyway.
Amen to that. Yep.
Yes. Mm.
But guys, thanks so much for joining me. Really appreciate having you both on board.
Thanks, Ben.
If you'd like to read more from Nina, you can go to travelswithnina.com. For Michael and me, and also Nina, where our stories are on traveller.com.au. I'll see you next time on Flight Attendant.